What I had in mind of talking about for me today is my part here is to talk about walking meditation. I don't talk about it a lot. And I was thinking today that maybe we should offer a 2 or 3 week, 4 week introductory course in just walking meditation. And and it comes to a surprise to many people that there is such a thing as called walking meditation, because most people in the West, I believe, associate meditation with sitting quietly in a chair on the floor, cross-legged, and with the eyes closed, perhaps, or not. And the idea of, you know, this moving meditation, meditating in movement and activity, is a little bit more foreign than the idea of quiet meditation. If you go back to the traditional teachings of meditation in Buddhism, you find that there are four postures that are called the four classic postures, or the dignified postures, for meditation practice. And you're allowed to meditate in any one of these four postures. There's sitting meditation, there's walking meditation, there's standing meditation, and there's lying down meditation. And all four are quite valid and great. In certain circumstances, one or the other might actually be the best way of meditating. The problem with lying down meditation, you can probably guess. I think I noticed some of you nodding off, even sitting up. But laying down, people fall asleep quite readily. And usually in our scene, people do lying down meditation for two reasons. One is they have a physical need to do it. And the other is that it's a way of meditating as you're falling asleep. So some people like to continue their meditation or engage in kind of more meditative approach to falling asleep, and then will lay themselves down quietly and be mindful of the breathing, or just mindful as they fall asleep. So walking meditation was taught by the Buddha, was emphasized by the Buddha, so it has an ancient pedigree or ancient kind of source in the Buddhist tradition. And it's been said that there's a kind of a record, if these records are reliable, that the last person who was enlightened in the lifetime of the Buddha was enlightened doing walking meditation. Isn't that great? And you might think that it's, you know, too pedestrian to be of any real value, you know, to be real spiritual. You know, spiritual is something, the word spirit. Spiritual has the word spirit in it, which is connected to the word to breathe in Latin. Respire, you know, we say respiration has the same word. Same. So breathing, respiring, respiration is quite spiritual. But, you know, the feet are so pedestrian. You know, what can be spiritual about that? The Buddha spent his life as a monk walking around India. That's what he did. There was, you know, he didn't ride in carriages or on horses or the things that were available back then, but he walked. And so in addition to his walking meditation, he spent a lot of time walking. And walking, as we know, is a great exercise. It's a great conditioner for the body. It's also a conditioner for the mind. And you know, we kind of overlook sometimes. It's often overlooked the fact that the Buddha had spent a lot of time walking, and I think it created the right, you know, created a certain kind of healthy mind-body condition for the Buddha to sit down to meditate in. It's very helpful if you take care of your body in order to support your meditation practice. So just doing simple things like exercising and eating good food or whatever creates suitable conditions. It helps make meditation, it helps make it easier to go deeper in your meditation. And so the Buddha did that. He walked right until he died. He died when he was around 80, and he was still walking around India. Walking is a great thing to do. I love walking. So in addition to its value as a meditation practice, I find it, you know, certainly valuable for me as an exercise. I also find it valuable as a way of when I need to think about something. I do it. I really love going for walks. If I'm angry, rather than getting angry at somebody, I love going for walks And then when I walk, I'll think about what I'm angry about and just be with my feelings and let them kind of course through my body. And somehow the rhythm of walking, the activity of walking, helps me be more clear about my thinking, about what's going on with me, and kind of, it helps me kind of check in with myself in a way that I can't really check in with myself if I stay distracted or indulge in yelling at the person. And then I'll go for a walk, and then when it becomes clear what's going on, then I might, if I'm angry, then I'll come back and talk to the person in a different frame of mind. There's a Vipassana teacher by the name of Kamala Masters, wonderful teacher, a Filipino-American who lives in Hawaii. And she has four children, and she was a single mom for most of that time. And she got into meditation. And at some point she went to a little retreat, I think it was like a weekend retreat, taught by an Indian Vipassana teacher. And at the end of the retreat, he said to everyone, you should meditate every day at least an hour. And she said, looked at him and said, no way I can do that. And he said, why? He said, well, I have four children, I'm a single mom, and I have to get the lunches ready, four lunches in the morning, and get all this breakfast and everything, get these people out the door, and all this, I can't meditate. And so, I don't know if she invited him or he invited himself, but he ended up living with her for a little while, and for, I don't know, a week or something. And he watched her, he followed her around in her daily tasks to see how she did things. And then he would point out, oh, in this activity, this is how you meditate. This is how you're mindful, how you develop your mindfulness, how you develop your ability to be present for what you're doing in this activity. And so, like, he would watch her to wash dishes. And, okay, and he would, you know, teach her, you know, how you take dishwashing as a mindfulness practice, as a place to help the mind and the body to really be present for what's going on. And that's really the heart of meditation practice, being present for what's going on. And you'll find out, if you meditate or do other things, is how easily the mind wanders away from the present moment. It's interested in other things besides the present, even though the present is really where life is lived. And so, you know, he trained her to just be there fully for those dishes, and when you're washing the dishes. And then there was a hallway in her house, and the hallway connected all the rooms in the house. And he told her, this hallway should be your meditation hall. And whenever you step into this hallway, do walking meditation in this hallway. Go to where you need to go. Go to the next room. But make this hallway a place where whenever you're walking in here, to be a place for walking meditation. So whenever she stepped into that hallway, she did her walking meditation. There was, you know, maybe three, four steps. I don't know how far it was. But, you know, she did her walking meditation. And she got into this, and she did this for years, until her children were old enough where she could go off on a long retreat. And she went off on a month-long retreat. And she went deep, very quickly in that month-long retreat. She dropped really deeply into her meditation, much faster than apparently anybody else in that retreat. And she went out to a few more retreats and went very deep in her meditation experience, and eventually became a meditation teacher in her own right. And she attributes the speed by which she was able to progress in meditation on the retreat by the fact that she had practiced so diligently in her daily life activities, in that hallway, just walking those few steps or washing the dishes. In the things she had to do to take care of her family, she would try to be really present for it rather than wandering away. So walking meditation is something that can be done formally. You need to take a time and actually do it as a meditation practice with nothing else going on. Or you can do it in between, in the activities of your daily life, just as you walk. You have to walk around. So you take that as a time to train your mind to be present, to wake up to what's going on, to check in with yourself. What's really happening now, here? So both ways are wonderful. One of the advantages of walking meditation over sitting meditation is that most people spend a fair amount of time every day, it's a normal activity, to be walking. even if you don't walk a lot, you walk at least maybe from your car to your, you know, to your home or something. And so there is walking that people do. Not a lot of people spend a lot of time sitting around with their eyes closed during daily life, except in meditation. So the walking is much closer to what we do in daily life. So there's a more natural bridge as you learn how to be wake up and be mindful and be present and be concentrated in the walking meditation. It resonates, or it's more closely connected to what you do in daily life. So it's easier for some people find to make that bridge to having more presence, more mindfulness, more concentration in the activities of daily life. So how is walking meditation done? It's done by finding a walkway. Oh, one more thing to say before I go to this, it just occurred to me. What you find in monasteries, traditional monasteries, and meditation centers, if we had a bigger building, maybe we would designate a place to be specifically for walking meditation. You find rooms or spaces that are specifically designated just for walking meditation. So like if you go up to Abhayagiri, a monastery, a Buddhist monastery up in Ukiah, and the monks there live very simply, and they live in these little, teeny little cabins in the woods. And outside their cabins, they've cleared these pathways that are about 30, 40 feet long. They look like a little bit, like a bocce court? You know what that is? Bocce is kind of like, what's a comparable thing?
Lawn bowling.
Lawn bowling. Or maybe like a horseshoe, you know, like a horseshoe pit? You know? Like a really narrow horseshoe pit, but this wide. And maybe longer than a horseshoe pit. But they kind of cleared out the ground. And it's usually a little bit sunken because they walk back and forth a lot. And the monks won't go do the walking meditation in its place. They built specifically for that purpose. And my teacher in Burma, he had a little cabin that he lived in, a little house. But on the side of his house, built as part of it, with a door going from the main living area to it, was a hall, the length of the house, that was only for walking meditation. So, you know, it was that important that he actually built this into their house. I don't expect any of you to build an addition to your house for walking meditation, but... So, how do you do walking meditation? What's the way? The thing is, you find a walkway that's... A walkway is about 30 or 40 feet long, 30 or 40 paces long. If you can't find that, then you do something that's shorter. And you walk back and forth. You walk back and forth. Some people will ask, why can't I just kind of wander aimlessly around my walking meditation? Well, you can, but the advantage of walking back and forth is that, versus wandering around, if you're wandering around, part of your mind has to negotiate the path. It's very simple. You don't think it's much mental effort, but you have to kind of avoid that chair and step over that rock or whatever. And so you're kind of always kind of engaged in problem solving and figuring out where to go. If you walk back and forth, pretty soon you know the route. And that part of the mind can be put to rest. And when you can really get into it, start getting concentrated, then you really realize how valuable it is to know the route. You don't have to think about it anymore. If you're not concentrated, you don't think, what's the big deal? But when you get really still, you don't want to have that extra kind of activity going on. Some people ask, why can't I just walk around in a circle? And also, you're welcome to walk in a circle. But part of the reason we recommend walking back and forth is that a circle is continuous. And it can mask, it can hide, or it can help hide the fact that you're just lost in your thoughts. But if you walk back and forth and come to the end of your walkway and stop, or turn around, there's a kind of a transition, a natural kind of stop, kind of transition period. And there's a chance there to really notice what's going on here. And you could notice perhaps that you actually were lost in your thoughts. And then you have this, you could let go of them and start again. And try to get to do that next pass without getting lost in your thoughts. And if you do get lost in your thoughts, then you have this little interruption at the end that catches your attention and maybe more chance to notice. But if you walk in a circle, there's no interruption. So you more likely get lost. And more likely stay lost. So you find a walkway 30 or 40 feet long, and we simply walk back and forth. What I recommend to people is that you first find a pace that gives you a sense of ease as you walk. In the retreat scene, where people go on long meditation retreats, some people really get into walking slow, so slow that you'd stand there looking at them for a little bit, for maybe 10 seconds, and you'd wonder, are they really walking? And then there were even people who got into competitive walking, and to see who could walk the slowest. And there was this kind of feeling of slow is where it was at. And my teacher in Burma, he power walked when he did his walking meditation. Literally, you know, if I was trying to keep up with him, and I'd almost have to run or jog next to him. So that's allowed. You know, you can power walk if you want. You can walk fast. And if you're really tired, then faster is really good. Generally, I advise people to walk slower than the normal kind of walking pace, walking on a sidewalk. But it really varies. But the guideline I think that's more useful is see if you can find a pace that brings you a sense of ease. And maybe that's not always accessible. But can you find some that gives you some sense of ease or some sense of well-being as you walk? Some people walk when they're angry, and that kind of helps kind of bring some kind of ease or something. And so can you get a sense of ease? And that'll help establish the pace, the speed in which you walk. If you're really agitated, maybe what brings a sense of ease is actually to walk really fast. And however, if you're really calm, maybe what sense of ease then is to actually walk really slowly and calmly. As you do the walking meditation, the speed might change. It might be an internal sense of what feels more appropriate as you walk. So if you find a pace, a speed that gives you a sense of ease, and then you begin checking in with your body. You use your body as the base. As I like to say, what we're trying to do in meditation is to have our mind and our body in the same place at the same time. And oftentimes, they're not. If you're sitting here thinking about what happened at work today, your body and your mind are in two different places. Your mind is another place at another time, but your body is here. If you want to harmonize those and have them work together so they're not working against each other, and so they can really rest together, then you want to have them in the same place at the same time. And since most of us can't do anything about the body, because, you know, it's just always here now. We have to kind of learn how to train the mind to be here with the body. So as you begin doing the walking meditation, you begin dropping into your body, checking in with your body, resting in your body, hanging out with your body. For some people, it's very foreign to be with their bodies. They spend much of their life, much of their day in their thoughts. They might have work that's all about thinking, or they might have other reasons why they're lost in their thoughts. Some people are preoccupied by things, by their fear, their worries, and so they're always kind of negotiating their fears and their worries in their head. Some people are afraid of their body, or they've gotten messages that certain religions give the message that there's something impure or bad about their body, and so people kind of stay detached from it. They don't really connect to it. Our emotional life is often very much tied in with what goes on in our body. And if we want to try to avoid our emotional life, one great strategy is spend most of your time in your thoughts, thinking about things. So it's hard, but it's a training to come back into our body. John Travis, who's a friend of mine and a teacher, said that just prior to learning about when we started off learning about Buddhist practice in Asia, he was a basket case. And he spent a lot of his time disassociated because he was so emotionally, life was so difficult for him. He had a traumatic life. And so he got disconnected with himself. And so he met this teacher, Tibetan teacher. And he was hanging out with this teacher for a while. And the teacher at some point was going to go to some other place in Nepal, up in the Himalayas, to go to some monastery and teach there, hang out there. And they took a little plane to get up there. But there wasn't enough space in the plane for John to go on the plane. So John had to walk, which was a many days walk to go up into the mountains. And so the teacher gave him instructions. He said, when you walk up the mountain, feel your feet. Sounds like great spiritual practice. Feel your feet. And so that's what John did all those days, walking up the mountains. He felt the feet. And he said at some point he started crying because he had never been so connected to his body as he had been during that walk because of that instruction. Just stay in, feel your feet. Feel your feet touching the ground. Be in your feet. And so the first thing to do after finding a sense of ease is to begin just being in your body. Hopefully you can try to slowly become feel at home in your body, comfortable in your body. If you're not comfortable in your body, then have enough trust that it's useful to hang out with the uncomfortable sensations. Just be with that. It's really great to be, it doesn't sound great, but it's spiritually significant and useful to hang out there with your uncomfortable feelings in your body and let them be processed through your awareness. And then, as you do the walking, feeling what it's like to walk, for your body to walk, begin letting your attention settle into your feet, or into your lower legs and your feet. And in the walking, seated meditation, we often use the breath as the anchor to keep us in the present. And it's the rhythm of breathing in and out, that rhythm, the alternation of it, helps us to as an anchor. In walking meditation, the anchor is the feet doing the stepping, the legs, the alternation of the legs and the stepping. And having some alternation of something is very helpful for keeping the mind on track. If things were always kind of fixed and weren't changing and moving at all, then it would be very hard to keep the mind interested and kind of connected to what our experience is. But because sensations are moving and changing, it's actually easier generally for the mind to stay there with what's going on. So the idea then is just to hang out there with the steps as you step. Feel it. Feel the kind of contact with the ground. Feel what it's like for the legs and maybe the feet to tense up a little bit as you lift the leg. To feel the movement of the leg as it swings through the air. To feel what goes on there. Don't be so concerned about looking for the right experience. Just, you know, how it is for you. Whatever that might be. Walk back and forth. Then as you're doing that, there's a little trick of the trade, a little aid that you can do. And that is you can very subtly, as quietly as you can, without the straining, label your steps as you walk. So you can just do it as simply as stepping, stepping. Or it can be left, right, left, right. Or those are very simple. And the function of that kind of labeling is to keep that part of your mind that wants to think occupied in the most rudimentary kind of thought that there could be, so that it's not less likely to wander off in some flight of imagination. An idle mind will get in trouble. So you have something very quiet and very simple for it to do to kind of keep, you know, stay with. Also, it points the mind in the direction of where you want the mind to be looking at. So you're saying stepping, okay, notice the feet. Or left, right, okay, notice the left foot, notice the right foot. If you do left, right, it's kind of cute because if you get into it for a while and do it for a while, sooner or later you'll notice that instead of saying left for the left foot and the right for the right foot, you're saying right for the left foot and left for the right foot. And that is a sign that you're not so attentive anymore. It's gotten kind of mechanical. So having that as a little cue sometimes can be helpful. Okay, I got to really connect now and not kind of be split between my fantasy and thinking that I'm present for my feet. The classic labels for walking meditation is to do lifting, placing. Lifting, placing. You actually break up each step to different phases, stages. Lifting, stepping. And then when people start going really slow, they go lifting, moving, placing. Lifting, moving, placing. And so it goes. If you're walking somewhat slow, when you come to the end of your walk, you pass, it's nice to come to a full stop, turn around, stop, and then start again. If you set up your goal to be mindful during the whole time you're doing walking meditation, it might be too much. What's more useful is to set up a dedication, a kind of a commitment or a resolve to be as present as you can for the next pass, those next 30 feet. Can you stay really present for 30 feet with something as simple as walking? Well, try it. And if you can't, then make a little bit more resolve to hang in there, some strength of mind, strength of character, stay in there. And it's not easy, but that's the training, is to develop that ability. And then when you get to the end of your pass, turn around and make the commitment again. So you're making a small commitment or that resolve to stay present in small chunks as you go along. That's what I want to say for now. So now I'd like to see if you have any questions about that, about walking meditation, or anything you want to ask about walking meditation. And then I'd like to do a little exercise for preparing you for walking meditation. And then I thought we'd do a little bit of walking meditation, just short, very briefly, and then we'd sit down and see if there's any other questions, and then end with a little sitting. So, yes. Are you closing your eyes?
Yeah.
No. And maybe you're walking too slow. You're actually getting dizzy?
No. But just having that sense of losing equilibrium and wanting to sort of fall over.
Uh-huh. What happens if you walk faster then?
Yeah, it's better. But also I think where the eyes are has might have something to do with it.
Uh-huh. Yes?
I know I've had, just my own experience with that, is that taking smaller steps helps a great deal. The longer the step is, the less momentum, and so the stability is impaired. Really small steps, I mean, one really have a hard time for them.
Smaller steps.
Yeah.
Also being very present of other people around you, like when they're passing, you go,
The some people will walk along a wall, or if there's a railing, so they're actually touching it, they're holding the railing, and that helps some people.
Just makes you think how much of your brain is helping you just stay upright. Did you give a time suggestion for the walking meditation, or build up, or?
Yeah, it really, you know, it depends what you want to do. On retreats, when people do meditation all day, then it's very important to alternate sitting and walking meditation because there's different benefits from walking meditation than from sitting, and different from sitting than walking. There can be different benefits. So, for example, over time, they tend to balance each other out. So if we sat all day, sitting meditation all day, we tend to get lethargic. And so the walking has a function of giving energy again. But if you walk all the time, it tends to be a little too agitating. And so the sitting then kind of settles you again. So in retreat, we might walk for 45 minutes, 40 minutes at a time. At home, you might walk, you know, it's really up to you what works for you. And some people will like to do a little bit of walking meditation before they do seated meditation. Kind of gets them in a little more concentrated, helps them kind of get more here. And so they might just do 10 minutes or 5 minutes of walking meditation and then sit down for the regular sitting meditation. Some people will only do walking meditation because it works for them. They really love it and just helps to get more concentrated. And so in daily life, it really, you know, it helps their daily life because they get concentrated and calm. And then it's up to you what works in your life. I would encourage a person, if that's all you're doing as a meditation practice, to do it for at least 20 minutes. And then if you feel like you're getting into it, then you could always do it more.
I've walked the last
describing the advantage of walking straight. I mean, in an labyrinth, you need to negotiate the terms. So I wondered if you could comment on that.
Well, I think, I don't know what to say. Labyrinth, I think, is great. It's kind of, it is calming. It's kind of engaging in itself. It's like a guided meditation. If you're sitting in meditation, someone's guiding you, people can get much more concentrated usually than for a novice person than if you're on your own. Because someone's guiding you, it's interesting, someone's prompting you, and someone's cutting through your fantasy, reminding you to be present again. So a labyrinth is kind of the same thing. It's kind of a world in itself that pulls us into it and keeps us on track. So it can be very calming. But in that, it's more of a concentration practice or calming practice. What we're trying to do with mindfulness is not just simply get calm and concentrated. We're also trying to be very acutely aware of what our experience is. And perhaps with a labyrinth, at some point, there's a trade-off because you might get calm and the calmness helps you become aware of what's going on. But at some point, the need to negotiate the labyrinth detracts from being able to go even more into oneself and be more in touch with oneself. Yes, please.
So if the idea is to try to be in the body, and you were saying specifically maybe concentrate on your feet, left, right, I guess I'm just trying to find a balance between that and being aware of what comes up in the moment. Like maybe I feel my arm swinging or hear birds chirping or you know what. So is it better to just maintain, to maybe push the other things away and maintain your focus on one specific thing or be aware of everything?
It's a good question. There's no generic answer for you. Those kind of depends how you want to practice. I mean, some people love to practice more choiceless awareness and just more open to what's going on. One of the functions of walking meditation, which is a little bit different than sitting meditation in our scene, in Vipassana scene, is that walking meditation tends to be has a little bit more focus on developing concentration. And since you're trying to develop concentration there, you want to try to keep the mind in one place much more than maybe you would in sitting meditation. So there's more of a dedication, okay, I'm just stay with this no matter what. If something really powerful happens that is calling your attention, then you can let go of it. If there's a lot of thoughts or a lot of feelings arise, then you might want to just stop in your tracks and spend some time being mindful of it and close your eyes and just be with it until it's acknowledged and taken care of and then start again. If it's some beautiful sight that you see, then you want to, if you really want to, you really for some reason want to do looking meditation, then stop and just look at it. What you don't want to do is what you see. Sometimes people are walking along, they're walking along mindfully, very mindful, and then at some point they're going like this. And they're doing two things at once. It's really hard to be, somehow there's a feeling that they're really into the practice, right? But really they're looking at something. So it's better just to stop and just do looking meditation, and then when you finish, then continue.
So completely do whichever you do. Don't be caught in between.
Yeah. Okay. So why don't everybody stand? And have a couple of feet in front of you that's clear. And then feel... So close your eyes. And feel your feet. Closing your eyes, feeling your feet. Feeling the weight of your body against your feet, against the floor. And then bring your attention to your left foot. Just feel your left foot a little bit as it is. With your weight balanced on your two feet, feel your left foot. And then keeping your attention in your left foot and noticing how the sensations change, slowly shift your weight over onto your left foot. And then hold, and just feel your left foot. Feel how it's different sensations in the right foot. And now put your attention in your right foot. And noticing how the sensations change in your feet and in your lower legs, slowly shift your weight over to your right foot until most of the weight is there. Then staying that way, put your attention on your left foot and feeling how the sensations change in your left foot. Take a small step forward, slow step forward, and shift your weight onto your left foot, feeling sensations, and then bring your attention to your back foot. And then as you step forward, be aware of the sensations in your foot as you step forward. You can open your eyes if you're losing your balance. Okay. So now you can just stand still. You can open your eyes if you want. So what I'd like us to do now is to make a big circle inside the room here. So we all stand together. And we'll kind of walk around clockwise. So we kind of turn to your left. And you can keep your eyes open. Now, since there's many of us here, we might end up walking slower than we normally would if you're alone, kind of finding your own pace. But we're just going to, for about 5 minutes, slowly walk around. You can keep your eyes down towards the floor so you're not pulled away by a lot of sights. And just try to stay as present as you can in your feet, your legs as you walk. Maybe if you want to use a simple mental note of stepping or lifting, placing or something, you can do that to help you stay present. And explore this little practice for about 5 minutes as we walk around. So before we then do a little sitting to end the evening, are there other questions about walking or questions that came up out of that little short little session you'd like to ask? Yes?
I have a question. One time, a couple of years ago, you mentioned that every time you walked through a doorway, you used it as a trigger for something that seems to overlap a bit about walking meditation.
Uh-huh. Oh, it was a period. I learned this from my Zen practice, that I would, whenever I walk through a doorway, you know, from one room to the other or something, I would use that as a cue to remind me to be present, be mindful of what's going on, because sometimes, you know, it's helpful to have cues, mindfulness bells or something equivalent. So I use that. I could have done creaking meditation. The way we all creaked with everybody walking. So any other questions? Is all clear? Clear enough? Okay. So then take a comfortable, alert posture. And gently close your eyes. And then take a few long, slow, deep breaths. letting your breath return to normal. Let yourself settle in to your breathing, settling into the rhythm of your breathing, becoming quiet, concentrated, focused on each in-breath and each out-breath. Thank you very much. And last thing I want to say about walking meditation is that some people will take to it quite readily. And for some people, it's an acquired taste. Like for myself, it took a while doing it on a regular basis for some time before I began finding it not only valuable, but also quite enjoyable. And so if some of you are like me, then you might find that initially it's difficult, but that with time you begin really appreciating its value. So I hope this has been useful tonight, and I wish you all well. I'll be here again next Thursday.